The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, you can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24, Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Who hides Easter eggs that you never want to find? The Dust Bunny.
If you just read the bio for Dr. Steve, host of Weird Medicine on Sirius XM 103 and made popular by two really comedy shows, Opie and Anthony and Ron and Fez, you would have thought that this guy was a bit of, a clown.
Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to?
I've got diphtheria crushing my esophagus. I've got Ebola virus dripping from my nose. I've got the leprosy of the heart valve, exacerbating my incredible woes. I want to take my brain out and blast it with the wave, an ultrasonic echographic and a pulsating shave. I want a magic pill for my ailments, the health equivalent of Citizen Kane. And if I don't get it now in the tablet, I think I'm doomed and I'll have to go insane. I want a requiem for my disease, so I'm paging Dr. Steve. Dr. Steve! No.
From the world-famous Cardiff Electric Network Studios, it's Weird Medicine, the first and still only uncensored medical show in the history of broadcast radio, now a podcast. I'm Dr. Steve with my little pal, Dr. Scott, the traditional Chinese medical practitioner who gives me street cred. The weirder alternative medicine assholes. Hello, Dr. Scott.
Hey, Dr. Steve.
And we also have Charlie and Lindsay Kilmaster, real scientists, in the studio. We'll be talking to them in a minute. Hello, Charlie and Lindsay.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
This is a show for people who had never listened to a medical show on the radio or the internet. If you have a question you're embarrassed to take to your regular medical provider, if you can't find an answer anywhere else, give us a call at 347-766-4323. That's 347-POO-HEAD. Or, I was going to put Charlie on the spot. I decided not to do it. Follow us on Twitter at Weird Medicine or at DrScottWM. Visit our website at drsteve.com for podcasts, medical news, and stuff you can buy. Most importantly, we are not your medical providers. Take everything here with a grain of salt. Don't act on anything you hear on the show without talking with your doctor, nurse practitioner, practical nurse, physician assistant, pharmacist, state deer inspector, I guess, microbiologist, chiropractor, acupuncturist, yoga master, physical therapist, clinical laboratory scientist, registered dietitian, or whatever. All right, very good. Yeah, usually, Charlie, I'm a real asshole, and I'll give out the number and then make you do the poo head. Nobody ever knows what the hell I'm talking about. Now, you listen to the show, so you
I know exactly what
you're talking
about.
You might have done it. Damn it, I should have done it.
Yeah. Anyway. I remember the other one, too.
Sorry. Oh, really? 22?
Penis.
Very good. Okay, I'll give you one of these. Uh-oh. Oh, well. Okay, wait a minute. I think you deserve a full effect.
Give yourself a bill!
Thank you, Ope.
There you go.
Don't forget stuff.drsteve.com, stuff.drsteve.com for all your shopping needs. It's that time where the holidays are coming up. It takes you straight to Amazon, or you can scroll down and get some of the cool crap that's on there, including, I believe, the Flatus flute. And listen, the Flatus flute, I have nothing to do with it. Even though it's got my picture on it and it says Dr. Steve, you know, loves the Flatus flute or whatever, I have nothing to do with this, but I do find it to be hilarious. Now, their stupid website at flatusflute.com has an expired certificate. Let me just look and see if I visit the website, if it's still okay. Oh, boy. And I got to check. Come on. Okay, so I got to talk to Daniel about that. We'll try to get that fixed before the end of the week. I'll just let him know, but I can't get through to it. But it's flatusflute.com. It's a whistling butt plug. It's hilarious. No one actually should use it, but it's a great one of those gifts that you put in your, if you've got one of those white elephant or weird Santa gift exchanges. It's just so stupid. And I did this at Tacey's friends. I'm sorry Tacey wasn't here to meet you guys. She would really like you. But she had these friends, and they were all like octogenarians. The youngest one, I think, was like 73. And so they're even old by my standards. And we had this Christmas party, and I brought a bunch of Flatus flutes and stuck them on their stockings. I'm like, what the hell is this? So it was pretty funny. So it's good for stuff like that. And it's got a picture of me, a sort of a Ren and Stimpy type rendition of me, and a hairy ass farting out musical notes right into my face, and I'm like grinning like it smells like flowers. It's the greatest thing ever. So, and our buddy Son of Chris did the artwork, and he's also a genius. So anyway, check them out. We'll try to get him to get his website working again. And so there's stuff.drsteve.com, Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. And check out our Patreon. We're doing stuff that you will not hear anywhere else. It's only on Patreon. We've got classic shows that cannot be gotten on the internet anymore. That going way back to day one, like October 13th of 2005 on Sirius, you know, around the time of the Sirius XM days. And P.A. John and I did some podcasts back then that really nobody ever heard. So they're out there. And then we're also, Tacey and I are the return of Tacey. Yay.
Yay.
Oh, wait. So Tacey can't do this show, but she can do that because she can drink on Saturday. And we do three shows. So by the third one, she's three sheets to the wind. So every third show is a drunk show. And so it's Tacey and me, and we'll have some guests. We've got some surprise celebrity guests that are coming on that are people that aren't the usual suspects. So that's going to be lots of fun. And we've got real low tiers. Just go to patreon.com/weirdmedicine and check it out. And don't forget Dr. Scott's website at simplyherbals.net. That's simplyherbals.net. Do you have anything up there?
Nope.
Okay.
But worse.
Yeah, all right. You're working. No, I hit the wrong one.
No, I like the other one better.
Yeah. All right. That one's so good. In the studio today, we have real scientists, Lindsay and Charlie Kilmaster. Now, Lindsay, this shows what you can do with a master's degree. She worked for the CDC Tick Lab. She was on the IMCDC series, and she's done avian flu research.
That's right.
And Charlie is a deer biologist. I mean, who cares? But
yeah.
Anyways, yeah, boy, you're batting out of your league, Charlie. Lindsay seems to be the one with the bona fides here today.
Oh yeah, and she makes more money too. So.
Good, that's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, no, joint checking account.
Excellent. Yeah, I've been on the other end of that before, and it didn't work out so well for me. So hopefully that'll work for you guys. But actually, I'm shitting on Charlie. He really has a cool job. He's a deer biologist for the state of Georgia. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be talking about tick-related illnesses because they both. Now, did you guys, you both had interest in rickettsial and tick-related illnesses, or this happened as part of your careers, or how did that intersect?
That's Lindsay's wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So
but you're a deer biologist. You got to know something about.
Well, yeah, they're part of the life cycle. We both took the same wildlife disease course, a 10-credit-hour course back in graduate school, and. So that's kind of where we were first. So I'm involved in it, but when it comes to the nuts and bolts of the diseases, she's definitely the expert.
Yeah, I was doing my master's research, I did work with sandflies, and so I had worked with bugs and wildlife and in the lab. So they let me work with ticks.
Sandflies, you talking about like when you're at the beach and these things take a big chunk out of you?
No, these are the ones with like leishmania down in Central America.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of stuff in this world that we don't have here that we're awfully lucky we don't have.
That's
yes.
I mean, good Lord.
Parasites.
Yeah.
I mean, ugh.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So we're going to talk about all that stuff. Did you guys hear the show on zoonotic metastases when we had PA Lydia in?
Yes, I listened to it.
I didn't.
Okay, so you guys will be interested in this because these two have an interest in zoonotic disease. So these are diseases that humans can get from animals. And this person had a tapeworm, and the tapeworm had tapeworm cancer. And somehow the tapeworm cancer cells, they weren't human cells, they were tapeworm cancer cells, got into this person's body and metastasized. So they had a cross-species cancer, a malignant metastasis.
That's the wildest thing I've ever heard.
Yeah. So for people who don't understand the jargon I'm using, a metastasis just means it's spread all over their body. But it wasn't their cells. It was the tapeworm's cancer. The craziest thing. I've never heard anything like that.
You don't think about wild animals getting cancer. They do, but you know, a lot of times they just don't live long enough for it to be really much of an issue. But I guess a tapeworm living inside a human.
Stupid big long bag of DNA that just eats your shit and reproduces. It's disgusting. And what is the purpose of those things?
People used to use them to lose weight.
They did. Yeah, they would eat the spores or whatever, the eggs. Whatever. Yeah. That's not a smart way to lose weight.
a crappy byproduct of evolution.
Yeah, really. Yes, exactly. Well, you know, there's a niche for everything. You get a drop of water from a pond, and there's all kinds of crap in there that we don't know anything about, and they're just living their lives such as they are.
Yeah, they can actually look for a lot of wildlife species and fish species, rare species in river systems just by looking at running PCR on the water and picking up fragments of scales and all kinds of stuff.
So they're doing polymerase chain reaction on water, looking for DNA of things that they didn't know that were there.
Or they think are rare or may not exist in a river system anymore.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool stuff.
That's cool. You can also pick up traces of drugs in water systems, too, runoff from sewage systems. There will be you know, minute amounts of oxycodone and statin drugs and alprazolam, you know, Xanax, stuff like that in there. So, I mean, there's this invisible world around us. And then there's all my ham radio stuff, just the radio waves that we're just bathed in all the time. And gamma rays from galaxies billions of light years away that are just, you know, penetrating our bodies. Neutrinos from the center of the sun. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I don't know how we got off on that. It's probably the edible I did before you guys got here. Just kidding, everybody. Sounds like it, though. So, well, let's talk about some stuff. So, number one, before the show, you guys were saying that you definitely know that COVID was made in a lab. So let's talk about that. I'm just kidding. Just kidding. They did not say that. But you guys have some knowledge about this. What do you think? Well, about the origins of it. And you don't have to commit to anything. We all know. Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. But, I mean, either way, it's going to have to be a perfect storm, right? So for a pandemic, you have to have the perfect storm of everything coming together. Same kind of goes for a lab leak. I've worked in BSL-3 labs.
Tell people what that means.
So biosafety level 3, there's four different biosafety levels. They get stricter as you go up. So biosafety level 3, things like influenza, things that are aerosolized.
4 would be Ebola. I mean, those
right.
the people.
Things that we don't have treatments for, things that are fatal. Ebola, they still work with smallpox and BSL-4, I believe, if
did you read the book,
still,
The Hot Zone?
Mm-hmm.
That guy's working,
all
in,
that stuff, yeah.
working in the lab, and he's just working away, and these guys show up in these DSL-4, you know, suits. And he's like, what the hell am I supposed to be here?
But, I mean, I've seen people
Can
work in
imagine?
Those labs, and I've seen people not do things correctly.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, is it beyond the realm of possibility that it came out of a lab?
Well, people
no.
do stupid stuff.
Most likely.
I've seen The Stand.
Yeah.
That guy took off. He got scared and he took off and went right through the gates.
Right.
That's fact, right? The Stand. Stephen King's The Stand. But, I mean, that's how these kinds of things happen, though. I mean, Michael Crichton in the Andromeda Strain talked about the confluence of just stupid events that can cause something catastrophic to happen.
Right.
You talked about that in Jurassic Park, too, which was really the crux of that book. It wasn't about dinosaurs. It was about how life will find a way
right.
if it's given a chance. But anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, so,
I'm getting all excited, you can tell. This is fascinating.
There were some, you know, all these DNA sequences. We haven't been able to find an intermediate host, you know, where they think it went from bats to something else to humans. So could it have gone from...
That was the hypothesis, was that it was this wet market.
Right.
And it was a bat bit, a civet. Was it a civet? Was that what they thought it was?
It was some a pangolin.
Pangolins. They were looking at pangolins.
Pangolins.
But, you know,
but then they haven't found any that have COVID.
No.
Right?
And these markets, they're a great breeding ground for
sure.
stuff like this. You bring in wildlife, you bring in domestic species, you bring in humans.
Mm-hmm.
Everything just mixes together.
Yep.
And then
that's
out
contagion.
Pops. Something. But what they're saying is it was going around way before that wet market.
Yeah.
But, you know, most likely scenario, these things pop up all the time.
Yeah.
Naturally.
Yeah. Yeah. I read a couple articles. I've got a friend who is a vaccinologist at Mayo. And I had read some of the things that he had said. I've been trying to get him on the show, but he's been, you can imagine how busy he is. And, he is really looked at the DNA sequence and or the RNA sequence, said that it's very unlikely this was manufactured.
Right.
Because it mutated in a way that a human who was trying to manufacture it wouldn't think to do it.
Right. There's
so nature
markers.
Is crazy that way. Yeah.
There's markers that you can find,
and
it's not showing any markers that it
Yeah, if they had coded a serial number in there or something, then we would know.
Perfect, right.
They weren't seeing that, but that doesn't mean that it couldn't have been enhanced in the lab and, you know,
or, you know, somebody just, they were working at the wrong safety level.
Yep.
Got
yep.
sick and, you know, it's mild. You think it's a cold and then
a crazy
the whole world
gets it. That the virology lab just happens to be right there at the night. This thing.
But, I still
maybe
think
it is a quanky dink, but
the natural, the, you know. It came about naturally,
but
you know, I'm not discounting lab leak at all. I don't think we will ever find out.
Even if all the scientists in there came out and said, yeah, we did it, I think that it'll be suspect at that point. Nobody believes anything anymore.
No.
You know?
That's for sure.
Yeah, we just don't believe anything. So 20 scientists come out of that lab and say, yep, it was us. There's going to be a whole bunch of people who can say, there's no way that's possible.
You wouldn't believe the number of people that came to Lindsay because of her being a scientist and being able to interpret the science. I mean, she was just like the go-to for all of our friends groups.
Sure.
When I couldn't trust know what to believe from the media. So.
Right. Yeah. Likewise. So, so let's talk about some of this stuff. We're all tired of talking about stupid COVID. We've got molnupiravir coming out. We've got early remdesivir. I mean, how irritating is it that all they did was focus on the critically ill instead of focusing on keeping people from getting critically ill. That's the thing that pisses me off about this. I'm still mad about it, but at least they're finally focusing on that. Oh, what a surprise. You give people on the ventilator with, you know, blood pressure of 60 over nothing, and you give them remdesivir, they don't get better. But you give it to them before they get sick, and miracle, 90% or 80-some percent of people, or I'm sorry, 80% reduction in people going to the hospital. I mean, and we're just doing this now?
We've been wondering the same thing this whole time.
Oh, they were so focused.
Where are the treatments versus a vaccine?
Right, thank you. Well, and you listen to the show, so you know I've been bitching about it for the longest time. And I used to do COVID situation reports on YouTube and said the same thing. You know, if we have a therapeutic that will keep people out of the hospital, the whole reason we're doing this is to keep from overwhelming the hospital system and to prevent people from dying, well, then it's over.
Yep.
Vaccine or no? I mean, the vaccine will help, but we found that this thing's going to be endemic. I had the vaccine. I had a breakthrough case.
I had a breakthrough case.
I had a breakthrough case.
Both fully vaccinated with what vaccine?
Pfizer.
There you go. Same here.
But we breezed through it.
And Pfizer's strong, man.
Yeah. But our daughters got it, and they were too young to get the vaccine.
Yeah.
And our oldest had a rough time. She ran a fever for like 9 days straight.
Ooh. We were in the emergency room, and thank God Charlie and I were both on our feet the whole time.
Yeah. Infected with COVID, running back and forth to the ER. But what are you supposed to do?
Yeah. But the problem with a vaccine, it's hard to get people to, you know, they can be real skeptical of a vaccine. But when they're sick with the disease, even if it's experimental, I think they're way more likely to go ahead and get a treatment once they're sick.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. We've seen pretty good acceptance for the monoclonal antibodies. The problem with the monoclonal antibody is still to this day, only 30% of people who should get it are being referred for it. I had one of my partners, I've told this story too many times, but she's half my age. She's still effed up 2 months later, and she was a candidate for it, but her primary care didn't think about it until it was, you know, too late.
We haven't heard much about it. I mean, you hear here and there were some places in Athens that were giving it out, but it's
free.
It's
free to the user.
Being referred.
We'll have monoclonal antibodies. For the people who are at risk, for everybody else, they can take molnupiravir as soon as it gets approved, which is going to be very soon. Pfizer's got one that looks even better. And then we've got early remdesivir. So I think we've got four things that we know actually work.
Whatever happened with dexamethasone?
Oh, that's great. They use it, and it does help. It even helps with the critically ill. It's one of the few things that we've used. And there are other things that we have. There's a couple of very powerful anti-inflammatory agents other than dexamethasone. They're not non-steroidals, but they aren't steroids that are powerful anti-inflammatory agents, and they have shown some benefit in people with severe disease. But you still see all these folks in there that get the dexamethasone, get remdesivir, get some of these other medications, and they're still not doing great, you know. So the key is to prevent them from getting there, and I was just pissed from day one that they were focused on the vaccine and the severely ill rather than focusing on therapeutics. Do it all. I mean, you're going to spend billions of dollars. What's another $500 million to work on a therapeutic? But we're there, so I guess better late than ever, Jesus. And I said we weren't going to talk about COVID, and you got me all mad again. So, let's talk about some things. So there's a bunch of zoonotic diseases that people should know about, and we're going to talk in a minute about this alpha-gal syndrome, which is fascinating to me. And then people are interested in Lyme because our good buddy, Greg Hughes, the actor that plays Opie on the Opie and Anthony show and Opie Radio podcast, had a Lyme scare that he talked about. I'm not talking out of school. He talked about it on his show a bunch. And what to tell our doctors when we get bit, and you know, our healthcare providers. But I also want to talk about rabies and prions before we get done. So a little tease for later on in the show. So let's talk a little bit. How about brucellosis? Which of you is the expert on brucellosis?
I think I can take that one.
Okay.
I deal with feral hogs quite a bit, and that's probably going to be one of the most common places people are going to get exposed to it.
Yeah, so tell us about it.
So, yeah, feral hogs are a plague on our natural environment in this country.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
my gosh.
They're tasty, though, right?
Yeah, well, they're pork, and they are feral. They're not, quote-unquote, wild hogs or Eurasian wild boar. They're a crossed-up genetic mutt of a pig.
Oh, wait. Okay. So I'm assuming you're talking about wild boars. This is something different.
Okay. So the wild boar that you're thinking of is what we collectively refer to as feral pigs all across the U.S.
Yeah. Okay.
So these are original descendants of Eurasian boar, but they've been domesticated for like 9,000 years.
Okay.
And they were, they're all crossed up, and then they were released, you know, that even by the Spanish in the first explorations is when pigs first came here.
Okay.
But they far outbreed even their native ancestor, not native, but their Eurasian wild boar ancestor. They can produce so many more young each year. It's just unbelievable. They can outperform everything reproductively.
Yeah.
So like pigs, all the pig diseases we've eradicated from domestic swine, they're all still floating around, and you should pretty much assume that any feral pig that you come across is likely to be positive for brucellosis.
Okay.
Hmm. So.
And so, and again, when you're saying feral pigs, that includes wild hogs?
Wild hogs, feral pigs, okay. One and the same.
Okay. I thought you were making a distinction. So I've heard of feral cows in Florida. Have you heard about this, that there's a bunch of wild cows in the Everglades and stuff?
Yes. There's we've actually got a small population on an island in Georgia.
Really?
Of feral cows. So it's not definitely not unheard of.
Okay.
But they, you know, if they've got room to graze and they can keep on going.
So feral pigs are mean as hell, right?
Oh, man.
No?
I get that all the time. You know, people,
well, they look mean.
They were going to feed Hannibal Lecter to them.
They look mean.
Yeah. You know, if you're in a pen with one, it's going to try to come after you. But if you're 9 times out of 10, if you run across one in the woods, they're almost always going to run from you unless they're cornered.
Okay.
So,
yeah, sure.
But I hear people that say they were charged by them, and I think they just spooked the pig, and the pig ran in their direction to get away.
I see.
So,
or maybe they had their babies with them.
That's a pretty big assumption. Those some bitches look mean, man. I'm telling you.
They can hurt you big time. Oof,
can you feed them dead bodies and they'll just eat the whole thing?
They will eat anything. They are highly omnivorous. And that's, you know,
so crazy.
But yeah, they eat just about anything, and that's what makes them so successful in nearly every environment you put them in.
Yeah.
So
they have ripping teeth and grinding teeth.
Yes, and fighting teeth, the tusks that grow on the boars.
And they'll use those to dig up stuff too, right?
Right, they do a lot of rooting. If you find hog damage in the woods, it looks like you plowed it up with a tractor.
Yeah. What are they going for, grubs? Or are they?
Yeah, they eat a lot of grubs. They eat tubers, they eat truffles, they eat all kinds of, like...
corn.
Truffles and potatoes. Yeah, and then they get into farmers' fields and stuff and just destroy them.
Oh, yeah. Like, you can see, especially right after they plant, like, peanuts or something, they'll just walk right down the row.
Damn.
And just dig up the seed peanuts.
That's hilarious.
I've got a buddy of mine.
They like all the same stuff we do.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a buddy of mine. He was telling me.
Except for the human flesh.
Well, unless you're really hungry.
Yeah, long pork. Exactly right.
Got a buddy of mine that he's got a huge population of these wild pigs up in Southwest Virginia, and he lives right on a river, and it's great farmland. Mm-hmm. And those things, he said, are just robust and wilder than hell. But he goes, they're a whole lot smarter than you give them credit for. And he says, like, they've got one farmer there that had this big, huge mess of corn, and the pigs ate the center of the corn. Now, so when you're looking at the corn field from the side, it looks like it's
looks fine,
normal. And then you go inside, it's like, those sons of bitches.
Yeah, they're actually using drones to fly over corn fields to look for hog damage like that.
Yeah, man, it's unbelievable.
Really?
Yeah.
Because they won't nibble around the edges. Well, they middle.
They will some, but they feel more comfortable if they're inside that cornfield. Oh, they sure. Then they've got cover.
Yeah,
but they're as smart as most dogs. They're unbelievably smart.
Yeah,
and we've had to devise like advanced technology to trap them. Mm-hmm. You know, we use remotely triggered traps, so you're like a ring camera. It shines on the and once you see. Make sure, count all the pigs and make sure the entire group's in the trap, and then you send it a signal to drop the door.
Wow.
Because if you leave one pig out,
they'll get the rest of them out?
They learn.
You educate it, and you'll never get that pig to ever set foot in a trap again.
Yeah, they say about red snapper, too, that if you miss one, then the rest of them won't bite anymore. You
know,
That's what I hear. I don't know if that could possibly be true, but they're big, you know, they're big fish.
Hell. Funny.
So brucellosis.
Yeah. So
causes fever, sweats, malaise. In other words, just feeling crappy. So far, it sounds like another thing that we all three of us had. Anorexia. In other words, loss of appetite. Headache. Pain in your muscles. How the hell do you know you have something like this?
Well, handling pigs. That's the main thing. So you got a long a potential incubation period. You might get symptoms in 1 to 2 weeks on average, but it could be months after exposure.
Wow.
So the main thing is, if you're handling a pig, wear gloves and don't rub your eyes when you're don't eat, don't smoke or chew while you're cleaning one.
Oh my God! Why would anybody do that? But I guess they do.
But and then if you get any sort of symptoms, just knowing to tell your doctor that you've been exposed to it, because if the doctor doesn't know you've been handling feral pigs, they may not know to test you for these symptoms that are common across a lot of other diseases.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I actually worked with CDC a number of years ago to film some stuff, and we interviewed a hog hunter that had gotten brucellosis. And here's one of the things I run into a lot is the last feral pig that I shot, I cut myself in the process of cleaning it.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if it had it, I'm going to get it.
Right.
You know, I went to my doctor, let him know that. And so he was able to get me on prophylactic antibiotics.
Yeah.
And I said, well, should I just wait? And he said, well, you can take 2 weeks of doxy now or wait until you got symptoms and then you might be on it for 6 months.
Right.
So that's a good thing to know.
So the treatment's doxycycline, very inexpensive, easily obtained drug, requires a doctor's prescription in the United States.
Yeah, so just knowing that
provider,
you've been...
I shouldn't say doctor. I know better than to say that.
Anyway. Sorry.
No, that's my fault.
But just knowing that you've been potentially exposed to it coming in direct contact with fluids of a feral pig, either in your eyes or a cut or something like that, I would consider that contact.
Yeah.
So it's it's not just skin. It could be any kind of fluid, feces, urine, blood.
Mainly around the reproductive organs. It's a venereal disease in hogs. So it's transmitted.
No wonder those things like hanging out in this part of the world. You know, makes me think, it wasn't very nice to say.
What?
I said, no wonder they like to hang out in this part of the world. makes me think of one of our favorite movies.
What? Don't be cryptic.
Deliverance.
It's a radio show.
Yes. Oh, Deliverance, yes.
Oh, boy.
Well, it's a venereal
disease.
Well,
because you're an idiot.
Well, at least we know where not to stick our hands.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like it, I've seen it all go south. I own a home and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor. You can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings. But I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today. Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Now, I, I know people that still hunt rabbits and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I watch that show alone. And a woman, Callie, came really close to winning the 100-day challenge. By the way, if anybody doesn't watch this show, you need to give it a try. It is an amazing show.
It's phenomenal.
They put people in the middle of nowhere right before winter with nothing. And they have to do everything. They can bring 10 items. And this guy, Roland, well, I don't want to give a spoiler, but there's some really phenomenal people out there. And some the one guy I liked was the big fat guy that won just because he was fat. He didn't do anything.
He had more weight to lose.
No, he just sat there until everybody tapped out.
He just wet everybody out.
In more reserve.
You remember that guy? I don't want to say his name because it's kind of insulting, but that's why he won.
Yeah.
But anyway, this Callie had gotten a porcupine, and when she was cleaning it, the liver had all these white, sort of looked like little micro abscesses.
I saw that.
It.
Yeah,
you did.
Yeah, that was wild. Yeah, she was trying to decide if she should boil
like,
it out.
Should I eat it? Yeah. Or and so talk to us about that, because there is a myth, and I don't know if it's a myth, that you shouldn't clean rabbits during the summer because you'll get rabbit fever, which is tularemia.
Yeah, I hear that a lot too. I think it is more common in the summer, but don't quote me on that particular thing. But
it's not hard and fast.
Yeah, it's always a good idea to wear gloves when you're handling rabbits because of the potential for tularemia. Mm-hmm. But when you're gutting an animal, if you look at the liver and the spleen, if it's got those white spots at that point, if you've come into contact with the body, you may want to consider talking to the doctor about potential exposure to tularemia. And it's a nasty disease. It doesn't have to get into a cut. It can just go right onto your skin and start infecting you. And it's also one that, you know, they're concerned about
for terrorism.
Terrorism, yeah.
It can aerosolize. So a lot of people get tularemia from like mowing over rabbit carcasses.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
And it
oh my
flies
goodness.
Into the air. And
no,
then they get,
don't
yes.
do that.
Don't
hey,
tell us.
Look on
that.
CDC's website. Oh, there's a picture of a lawnmower.
Oh, hell no. That's terrible advice.
And then the summer thing could be linked to ticks, too, because you can, it's a tick-borne disease as well. And
yeah,
so
and deer flies.
Anytime you're cleaning.
Skin contact with infected animals.
Mm-hmm.
Inhaling contaminated aerosols or agriculture and landscaping dust. Oh, my God.
It's a lot of landscapers.
This world is just stacked against us, isn't it? It's weird that we just go through our lives just thinking, well, okay, I'm going to watch Seinfeld tonight.
Yeah.
And then this stuff you mow your lawn that's... and you have tularemia.
Yeah,
now, and your lungs, no doubt.
Is that yeah. Is that everywhere? Is it more tularemia in North America, South America, Africa? Do we know?
All states except Hawaii.
Well, all states.
What it says here.
Hawaii. Yeah.
Yeah. Steps. Okay. Here you go. Steps to prevent tularemia: use insect repellent, wear gloves when handling sick or dead animals, and avoid mowing over dead animals. Yeah. Okay. I don't do it on purpose.
Yeah. I mean, if you got a dried up jerky rabbit that's laying out in the lawn. And you don't notice it because it's kind of covered up in tall grass. I mean, that's...
It's easy to mow over.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Oh, no. This is one of these. I hated these things in medical school. I know I memorized this at one point. All forms are accompanied by fever. It can be as high as 104. And in the middle of a global pandemic, people are going to just assume that that's what they have. But here's all these different kinds. Do you know them? Ulceroglandular and glandular.
No.
And all that's okay. So I'll run through these. Ulceroglandular, most common form of tularemia, followed by a tick or deer fly bite, or after handling an infected animal. Skin ulcer appears at the site where the bacteria entered the body. That sounds like a chancre. The ulcer is accompanied by swelling of regional lymph glands, usually in the armpit or groin. So a lot of people are going to think that they have cat scratch fever or something like that, because that'll present sort of the same way. And then there's oculoglandular. I guess that's when you stick your finger in your eye. Oropharyngeal, that would be from eating or drinking, I'm guessing. Yes. And then pneumonic, the most serious form, cough, chest pain, difficulty breathing from breathing dusts or aerosols. God, this sucks.
Yeah, it really does. And didn't you find a publication that showed that probably 50% or more of cases are tick-borne?
What?
It is a tick-borne disease. And so, like, yeah. As you're cleaning animals, like, when these animals die, the ticks drink blood.
Mm-hmm. Got nowhere to go.
When they detach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they go looking for another mm-hmm. meal. Mm-hmm. And so you're the closest warm-blooded thing to them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, they'll feed on reptiles, too. But, yeah, so they'll start crawling on you and attach. And
fucking ticks.
Yeah.
And what about when they, can they, like going from a nymph to an adult, can they still keep those diseases and transmit them through that metamorphosis?
With tularemia, I would have to look that up. I can't remember. Yeah, so there are some diseases that go from, so most of them will go through the different life stages. So with ticks, you have the larvae, which are the really teeny tiny ones that most people will call seed ticks. You know, so they'll hang out in a big ball of like 5,000 on a piece of grass, and you swipe by them, and
that's good eating.
You know, you get hundreds on you.
And then
there's nymphs and adults, and so you know, if they feed on something at any of those stages as an adult, they can have that disease.
Mm.
Now, when they lay eggs, some of the diseases will go into the eggs, and some of them won't.
Huh.
Just depends.
Wow, that's disgusting.
That's pretty gross.
Okay, so it says tularemia can be difficult to diagnose. It's a rare disease. I can confirm that. I've never seen a single case of it in my career, at least not that I recognized. And it's, you know, so if you get something, it's really important that you talk to your healthcare provider, say, I've been exposed to this animal or that animal, and don't forget about that. But the good news, doxycycline is treatment of choice. So another, why don't we just throw doxycycline at everything?
Yeah,
you know,
really.
If you're talking about tick-borne stuff.
It's just about right?
Rickettsia, like all those things. Yeah. Doxy.
Good.
Hmm.
Take that. All right.
That's pretty wild. So what about...
yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, what about like alligators and
Oh, salmonella and stuff.
Yeah,
you mean?
Down in South Georgia.
Yeah,
Florida. And
well, Miss Lindsay here and myself, we both killed alligators in Georgia.
Oh God!
So we
that'd freak out, man.
Oh no, it's cool. But no, we have a hunting season, yeah. And you have to apply for tags and all that stuff.
Really?
So, yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
I've never heard of such a thing.
Yeah. So generally, like if they've got salmonella all over the outside of their body, so they really recommend before you go to skin one, scrub the outside of the alligator with a mild bleach solution to clean the skin before you cut into it and potentially infect the meat. So
really,
yeah, yep. Alligator meat's excellent. Only bad thing is it's a source of bioaccumulation of mercury. They're big, large carnivores that live in the water and eat a lot of fish. So just like big predatory fish, they can bioaccumulate mercury as well.
It'd be nice if you could just take the meat that you get and have it tested before you go fry it up.
Well, we did a lot of testing in the early days when we first started hunting alligators again after we recovered them from an endangered status. Mm-hmm. And you can assume that the bigger the alligator, the more they bioaccumulated mercury.
Yeah.
And so we recommend that, you know, pregnant women don't eat a lot of alligator at all.
Yeah.
Or, you know, children no more than so many meals per week. We have actual specific recommendations on how many meals per week and that sort of thing.
How many? Who's eating alligator five times a week? I mean, I lived in Louisiana. I didn't know anybody eating gator that often.
Well, if you go hunting and you kill a big alligator and you got 30 pounds of alligator meat in your freezer.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
fair
that's true. Enough. Make your alligator stew, make your alligator tacos.
Yep.
Fried alligators.
That's about it.
How
about, I want to get to Lyme. We've got some time left. Let's talk about alpha-gal syndrome. Who wants to talk about that?
You want to kick it off, Lindsay? We can both.
Should the alpha-gal talk about that?
Yes. She is the alpha gal.
I don't know about that. But yeah, so it's an allergy to red meat that you can get after you've been bitten by a tick.
It's the nuttiest thing in the world.
So ticks have this, and it's a carbohydrate. So most allergies are from proteins. This one's from carbohydrates, a sugar. And so that's why it's got a delayed reaction, which is what's kind of really weird about it and helps or makes it kind of hard to diagnose sometimes. But you can get it from a tick bite. You can get it from, they initially discovered it from like cancer medications. And the people that were getting cancer treatments that were having this red meat allergy kind of overlaid with here in the South with tick distribution. So this one doctor was seeing a lot of it and he kind of put two and two together. Then at the time, it was kind of really weird. His technician or somebody in his lab, I could be telling the story completely wrong, but had gotten bitten by a tick and then ended up with this allergy, and they kind of put it all together. It was kind of
wow
serendipity there. But so you can't eat beef, pork. People have trouble with heart valves, knee replacements from, you know, any pork products.
Yeah.
They can reject
heart
it.
Valves
right.
Have alpha galactosidase in them, and your body basically just attacks it, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it's mostly, you see it mostly from organ meat or from fattier meats. So leaner cuts can not give you the same reaction, but the reactions from different people are really varied. So Charlie, actually, we wonder if he has a mild form of it. So some people can be really mild, some people can be severe, some people can take Zyrtec and eat meat
yeah.
Be fine.
I notice it. So we, being a hunter myself, we pretty much live off of venison in our household, and venison doesn't bother me at all, and I think it's probably related to the low fat content.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm on the road and I eat like fast food burgers like twice in one day, I'm going to wake up either in the middle of the night or the next morning with hives.
Yeah.
So the hives show up 3 to 7 hours later.
So weird.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, this thing can cause hives, itching, swelling, abdominal pain, cramping, all that stuff. And the treatment for it is to lay off of the red meat for like 6 months, right? And then the antibodies disappear because you're not continuing to regenerate them.
I've had it for, I've been eating meat the whole time, but I've had it for over 15 years.
Yeah.
And my some people they lay off of it and it doesn't seem to go away, and some people it does. Yeah. Mine has been kind of intermittent, and I went for a few years with no reactions, and I can't find any data on this, but I got a tick bite early last summer, and all of a sudden it shows back up.
That's interesting.
And so I don't know if it's
back up again.
Yeah, but I get bitten by ticks relatively frequently because of my recreation and my job that puts me out in the woods a lot.
So. Isn't that something? I'm trying to find some, what is it in the tick bite that causes this where you all of a sudden...
It's in the saliva.
Sure, but what is it,
though? It's the alpha-galacto...
Well, there's alpha-galactosidase in everything, though. You know?
Well, then it's
so if your hypothesis was and it may be it may be the way you're exposed to it,
right.
But you would all of us would be allergic to red meat because that's what the you know
who knows I mean there are so many different factors in tick saliva that you know there's stuff that helps evade the immune system they've got an anesthetic so that you know once they bite you. You won't feel it.
Right.
They've got all sorts of stuff. I mean, the bacteria in ticks, the tick-borne diseases, actually use the tick's saliva as a means to evade the immune system in some cases.
Yeah.
So don't ask me to get too deep into that.
I'm going to find out, though, because that's going to drive me crazy. Because for those listening who don't know what alpha-galactosidase is, it's a complex sugar that is in red meat. And you don't see it so much in chicken and fish. And so when people ingest this, they've got these antibodies against it, and then it's just mushing up into their, it's being absorbed in their GI tract, into the bloodstream, and then it's bumping up against the GI tract, and you're forming these inflammatory complexes there. And then, you get this bloating, the abdominal pain, and then ultimately the hives. And that's why it takes so long is because it's got the sugar's got to make it to the skin with these inflammatory complexes attached to it. Mm-hmm. And then now you've got this skin reaction. But that takes a while to diffuse out there.
Yeah, I get real bad heartburn. Like uncontrollable heartburn. Like you can take all the Tums or any... Omeprazole in the world, and it's not going to touch it.
I got something for you that you might try, and this might help anybody else that has that as stomach stuff, would be serum bovine immunoglobulins. Mm-hmm. So it's called Enterogam. And your doctor or other healthcare provider can write it for you. It can only be gotten from one pharmaceutical company in the country, and then they call you, and you have to give them your credit card. But it's $99 for a box of 30 packets of this stuff. And you know, it might last you months if you only use it every once in a while. And those bovine serum antibodies will bind to a lot of these kinds of toxic complexes. I don't like to use the word toxins, but they will bind to those things in the GI tract to keep them from coming into contact with the GI tract. That might help that. Because you're right, the reason Tums don't work is because it's not acid, it's inflammation.
Yeah, I've figured out that just taking a Zyrtec can knock my symptoms out.
Isn't that interesting?
It works really well with mine. But I've had a couple of family members or a family member and a friend that had this and got cured by acupuncture. So I'm thinking about trying that.
Wow. There you go, Dr. Scott.
There you go.
And I actually offered...
Digitilling.
I asked Dr. Scott to go ahead and treat him tomorrow, and he said he was too busy.
I'm too busy. I got shit to do, man.
Okay.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
That's just Dr. Scott. He just didn't care.
Yeah.
So I'm going to bet. I'm going to be Kreskin now, and I'm going to take I will bet, I don't know, $25 that you do not have B blood type.
I don't know what type my blood is.
All right. Well, good. I don't have to give you $25. But it says patients whose red blood cells, and this is from Medscape, who express the B antigen appear to be protected from alpha-gal allergy. And people with type B or AB have decreased risk, and type O or A are increased risk compared to that. So kind of interesting.
That is kind of crazy.
Yep. I've read something about blood type and was curious, and but then I couldn't find it in any of my medical records. So.
Well, we talk about these blood type diets and that they're BS and all this kind of stuff, and I don't know if they are or they aren't. I just haven't seen good data, real science done on those blood type diets. But blood type is a determinant of a lot of different factors in our health. And my wife, for example, is O negative, and I'm O positive, and so all our kids, she had to be vaccinated basically against my antibodies. She had to have blocking antibodies that would stop her body from making antibodies against the Rh positive kid. And she would be exposed to their blood when the kids are born. And that's why Anne Boleyn lost her head. Did you know that?
Because the Rh factor, she was a negative and Henry was positive.
Henry was positive, and she had one kid. This is always the pattern. One kid, and then you have multiple losses, you know, terminations of pregnancy after that. And so Queen Elizabeth the First, and so she was, in a way, almost lucky that her mom had that, because there weren't any sons that could take precedence over her, because at the time they would have put them ahead of her. And we would have never had the original Elizabethan era or any of that stuff. Shakespeare wouldn't have had his patron. And, you know, who knows what would have happened in that alternate universe where Anne Boleyn was Rh positive, what would have happened, you know. But anyway, how would history have been different? But yeah, so that's just a fun factoid in history that that if they had Rogam back then, things would have been different. But, you know, so my wife had the same thing Anne Boleyn did. I did not have to execute her, because she was able to have other children and give me male heir. So whatever. All right. So have we covered everything on alpha-gal syndrome?
I believe so.
Let's talk about Lyme disease real quick, because I know a lot of people, it used to be we thought it was just in the Northeast. When I was in Vermont, we sort of felt proprietary about it, that, oh, you know, this is our disease. But now they've seen it in every state of the country that I'm aware of, at least on the continental U.S.
Right.
So tell us, how do we know we're at risk for Lyme disease, and then what does it look like when we actually have it? Because a lot of people think they have Lyme disease that don't.
Right. So, I mean, again, it's kind of these generalized, you know, symptoms, malaise. You know, you might get fever, muscle aches. There's a lot of muscle aches, joint aches, those types of things. And if you don't know if you've been bitten by a tick, then, you know, it's one of those things that's really hard for doctors to diagnose. Mm-hmm. And so it was historically up north, but the ticks have moved down here. So we didn't have the ticks that transmit this disease, the black-legged tick, Ixodes scapularis. We didn't have those in the south for a long time, but they've made their way down here.
Damn Yankees.
Now, it's still the ticks that we have down here, when they look at, you know, prevalence of Lyme in the ticks compared to up north, it's still way higher.
In
up
the north.
Yeah. About tenfold higher. I mean, you're still only looking at like 1% of ticks up north and 0.1% of ticks down here. But they think that down here, those ticks are using reptiles in their younger stages, in those larval and nymphal stages. And reptiles are bad hosts for the Lyme spirochete.
Interesting.
So, yeah. Not like it.
So Lyme disease is interesting because it acts like syphilis in the sense that it has three phases. You have the rash. In syphilis, you get a chancre, and it divides and divides again, and then it goes away, and you think, oh, I'm fine. But the spirochete is going wacko in your central nervous system and stuff. Lyme, same way. You get this bullseye-type rash, real lacy. I've seen it. You know, I've treated a bunch of Lyme cases when I was up there. Lacy sort of rash that spreads out from the center of where the tick was.
Right.
And then it kind of fades away. And if you don't treat them, it'll come back and they'll get tertiary Lyme disease, because the secondary phase is latent. They just don't have any symptoms.
Right. And, I mean, you can have it for life.
Yep.
Now, with that bullseye rash, that's what a lot of people look for. But actually, less than half the cases have that bullseye rash.
Yeah.
So if that's, you know, if you're looking for that as your indicator, you know, it could be missed.
Right. So I get bit by a tick.
Mm-hmm.
Now what do I do?
So if you can keep your tick, you know, that's always a great thing. You know, if we can identify it, you've got a better chance of knowing what you might have. If you can put it in alcohol, that's even better.
Okay.
And then they can do the polymerase chain reaction to see what the tick's carrying. Sometimes if the doctor submits it in time and it's not too degraded, they can check on that too. But yeah, you go to your doctor and you tell you, and it's 6 months of doxy or rifampin, or both.
If you're confirmed, I know that the regular prophylactic, or the regular treatment for suspected Lyme disease, I think it's just 10 to 14 days.
Is it?
Yeah, doxycycline, 100 milligram twice a day for 10 to 14 days. And that's if you have erythema migrans, the rash that we're talking about. Now, if you have tertiary Lyme disease, it's 6 months.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that might be what you're thinking about.
Yeah.
If children get it, 10 to 14 days. And you can get neurologic Lyme disease. You can get Lyme disease of the heart. That sucks. And then you can get Lyme arthritis, too. And I've had those people back in the day, they would get an IV medication called ceftriaxone, and they would get that for months and months and months and months and months. So you don't want to screw around with this.
No. So,
but not every, you know, so you just said if you're in the South, you get a tick bite. If it's not on you for 24 hours, then the odds are very low, right?
For Lyme?
Yeah, for Lyme.
Pretty low. So when they've actually gone in and looked at transmission rates, it varies. Okay. And so you want to do your tick checks as soon as you get home.
Hmm. Yeah. And then, but then
you're relatively safe, but
even up north, the prevalence is, you said, 0.1%, right? So you have a 99.9% chance of not having Lyme from that tick.
It's 1% up north. Oh. So, and then it's 0.1% down here.
Okay. Holy crap.
Still, I don't know, 1%. On average, that, you know, that's a few papers. I've been out of the tick world for a little bit, so.
I have a lot of my clients who will call me and say, well, I just had sex with a prostitute. What are my odds? You know, I'm worried I have HIV. And then I walk them through, well, here's the prevalence. You got to take the prevalence. What's the percentage of people that are just in the real world randos that have HIV? And then you have to multiply that times the chance that you'll get it in a single encounter with somebody with unprotected penis, vagina intercourse. And it's, the number is very low. And that number being very low, I can usually talk somebody off the cliff, you know. But but the odds aren't zero. So I still tell them, next time, you know, use a condom. So what's your recommendation if you get bit by a tick and now the place is turning a little bit red, and knowing that there's more out there than just Lyme disease, what do you think people should do?
I mean, go talk to your doctor.
God, I'm going to say, I don't know. Here's some doxycycline.
Right. I mean, doxycycline treats a lot of tick-borne diseases. And so, you know, whether you know if it's Lyme or, you know, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, any of these other more obscure things, a lot of them are treated with doxycycline.
That's the good news.
And especially with, you know, some of these with children, you want to go ahead and give the doxy. A lot of doctors are still kind of reluctant to give that doxycycline to children because old formulations caused permanent tooth staining.
Right.
But that's not the case with the newer formulations anymore. So you want to make sure that if it's your child, that you go ahead and ask for that doxy.
What the hell was in the old doxycycline that caused people's teeth to be brown? We had one of my classmates in medical school had that.
Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
The new stuff doesn't do it.
New stuff doesn't do it.
I don't do that anymore. I haven't done it in a long time. So I practice my specialty, so I haven't dealt with kids' illnesses. So that's good to know.
With Lyme, it's not as important as like with Rocky Mountain spotted fever.
Yes.
One day difference in delaying that doxycycline can put a kid in the hospital.
Wow. That's a shit disease.
It is.
My brother had it when he was a kid.
Did he?
Yeah. Living right down the street here.
Really?
Yep.
Huh. How did they diagnose it clinically?
They had to. They didn't have a test for it then.
No, yeah. You know, clinically, we were running. There's some big pastures up here, and we used to play up in that pasture. And he just got really sick one day, and it's like, oh God. And he had Rocky Mountain spotted fever. He was sick as shit too.
Yeah, I bet.
He's okay now, thankfully.
Well, let's talk about the weirdest thing in the quote-unquote animal kingdom, the non-human kingdom, and that are prions. Which one of you is the expert on prions?
She knows a lot about it, but I deal with it on a nearly day-to-day basis because of chronic wasting disease.
So chronic wasting disease is a prion illness?
Yes. It is specific to the deer family, the cervids. Not all of the deer species can get it, but most of them can. Certainly all the ones that are native to North America, white-tailed deer, elk, mule deer, even moose can get it. Caribou can get it.
Is it transmissible to humans?
Yeah, so we don't think so, but we don't know so.
Yeah.
That's the thing about it. It's similar enough to mad cow disease, which was the bovine spongiform encephalopathy.
Right. Give
yourself a bill!
That came from feeding cows to cows. So cannibalism causes prion diseases like kuru in humans.
Yeah,
so.
Kuru is a prion disease from eating human brains.
Yes.
And I met the guy that did the research in, what was it, Borneo? Papua New Guinea, that's right. And I'm trying to remember his name, but I had lunch with him in medical school. It was fascinating, you know, his research that he did. And he was one of the guys that figured out, hey, quit eating brains and you won't get this.
Yeah. And, you know, the crazy thing is they weren't doing that. It wasn't like a long-term cultural thing.
Yeah.
It happened when, in the I think, only 50 years prior when the first Europeans were coming over and meeting indigenous tribes in Papua New Guinea and convinced them that they would retain the knowledge of their elders if they ate the brains. Yeah.
Some Europeans told them that shit?
Well, they gave the brains to the women and children.
Well, yeah, it was consuming the whole bodies, and they gave the crappy bits
organs. Yeah.
to the...
Oh, God.
So the women and children ended up with it more than the men did.
Oh, my God.
That's horrendous.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about prions. Prions are weird.
They are weird.
They may be a precursor to the life as we know it. They may be some of the oldest forms of something that can reproduce or cause other things to reproduce without being a virus, a bacteria, or a, you know, a eukaryote. And it's the way that Johns Hopkins is describing it is that they're proteins that can trigger normal proteins to fold abnormally. But my understanding is that these stupid things, if they don't act like a catalyst, they can actually reproduce themselves. I don't know how much of that is true.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that, but I know the triggering the folding of the similar prion proteins, the normal prion proteins that are occurring in the body. And it's with this disease in deer, it is 100% fatal, but it's slow. It takes, from the time they contract it and are exposed to it, it takes about 18 months before they really become sick and die from it. And so they slowly waste away towards the tail end of that. But it's slowly creeping across the U.S. It kind of spreads fairly slow on its own, but through inadvertent moving of live deer through the captive deer industry, it's gotten moved around the state.
Sure.
It could have been some carcass transport stuff. We know it can remain infective in the soil for years.
Oh, geez.
These things, you can't kill them.
Yeah,
they're really hard to
kill.
They're
heat stable, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
right?
It's crazy.
Because you can cook stuff and still get it.
Right. So we have an incinerator that we do, but our incinerator doesn't get hot enough to totally denature it. So we have to make sure we properly dispose of the ashes just in case. Now, we haven't detected it in my state, but where we're sitting now in Tennessee, it does have it in western Tennessee. Mm-hmm. So we're keeping an eye on it. It takes a long time, and I'm talking decades, before it really starts negatively impacting deer populations.
Yeah.
But just that concern that it could make a jump to humans.
So the prion itself is not produced. It's not like a virus, so that it doesn't inculcate itself in the cell and then reproduce itself. And it also doesn't sound like it reproduces either. I thought that it made more proteins fold like itself, but maybe it doesn't. It's just an indestructible toxin that acts like a catalyst then.
No, it makes other proteins
like itself.
Yeah.
So it just has to touch up against them.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And you know, with that contact, you know, we have normal prion proteins in our brain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
This is the abnormal protein. That abnormal protein touches up against another one.
And it turns it into something like itself.
It creates these giant complexes and then holes in your brain.
And so this is a relatively new disease. This disease occurred in the 1960s in Colorado, and it came out of a captive deer research facility.
Hmm.
At
Oh, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Here we go again.
Mm-hmm. I don't know all the details, but I know that they were doing scrapie research in sheep.
Right.
Scrapie. At the same facility.
Mm-hmm.
Scrapie being a sheep prion disease.
Right.
Hmm. Whether you're a conspiracy theorist or not, my personal guess is that it very likely was a species jump from scrapie out of sheep and into mule deer.
Hmm.
And but
oh my God,
weirdly, reindeer in Norway have come down with this, and we know that there's not been live deer being moved from America over to Norway. But there's also a history of scrapie in sheep there, and my personal belief is that it also made a species jump in that overlap between we're talking herded reindeer that are and probably interspersed with sheep in that situation.
Yeah, and they're being maybe fed ground up things from.
Yeah, that's a possibility, too. I mean, we know cannibalism causes it. Yeah. So. Well,
and I don't know about other countries. Here in the U.S., that's why they banned, feeding bone meal to that same animal. So now cows can get chicken bone meal, but not cow bone meal. But other countries, they may be able to still do that stuff. I don't know.
God.
But it's you don't want it. I mean, any of the prion diseases, there's spontaneous Creutzfeldt-Jakob in humans, and there's the craziest one I've ever heard of is the fatal familial insomnia.
Worst way to die.
Yeah, this one family.
I don't think that is the worst way to die.
Had insomnia, and it's
insomnia.
So it's
fatal familial insomnia. Yeah, it only infects this one lineage of family. It's genetic.
Genetic.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So what it does is it affects the hippocampus, I think, in their brain. You might have to check me on that.
I was just thinking the same thing.
But it disrupts their ability to sleep. And so they start going longer and longer and longer without sleep until their body eventually just shuts down.
No from, drugs from will make them sleep?
No, nothing.
What about Michael Jackson's Magic Milk?
It's
awesome
still
Magic Milk.
It still doesn't work, I guess.
They go insane.
Propofol or whatever that is.
Propofol.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hey,
it's crazy.
Wow. And this is caused I've already forgot what the hell we were talking about. You just blew my mind.
We were talking about chronic wasting disease.
But
prions are crazy.
Fatal familial insomnia. And it's just this one family.
Oh, it's just the one family. Okay.
Italy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's not transmissible.
If you eat their brains, I wonder if you could get it.
Oh,
that's a good question.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Who's going to do that? Double blind placebo controlled studies. Wow. It may initially be mild, progressively worsens, leading to significant physical and mental deterioration. Affected individuals may develop dysfunction of autonomic nervous system. Yeah. And that's, involuntary stuff. Body temperature regulation, sweating, breathing. Whoa! Don't know what that was. Holy moly. Yep. Caused by an abnormal variant of the PRNP gene. Holy crap. Oh, that's horrible. Now, that I've never heard of that. So I'm going to... You guys are going to get a $25 gift card so we can buy your dinner tonight as long as you eat at fast food on the way home. There you go, Lindsay. And then I've got two weird medicine mugs for you downstairs, too. Don't let me forget to give those
Just
to you.
Just don't eat your cheeseburger there, dude.
Yeah, no cheeseburgers for Charlie.
I'll just pop a Zyrtec and I'm good.
Okay. Wow. Wow, that's wild. And then they're thinking frontotemporal dementia may be somehow related to this. That's crazy.
To what?
To this prion disease that they're talking about. This fatal familial insomnia.
Plus, that is horrible.
That's the worst thing I've ever heard of.
Yeah, there's a great book that Lindsay and I both read called The Family That Couldn't Sleep.
Yeah.
And it covers all the prion diseases and both animals and humans.
Well, that'd be a good one.
Yeah, it's a great read.
For mental illness, my favorite book is The Man Who Mistook His Wife for a Hat. So check that one out. That's a good one. So both of those sound like good reads. Well, listen, we had prepared all this stuff because I told Scott, maybe they'll be boring. And so we have to have all this other stuff to keep it. But this was awesome. It went by so fast. We have to have you back.
Yeah, we'd love to come back.
Yeah, anytime. You're welcome anytime.
That was a lot of stuff we don't ever talk about.
No.
Pretty fabulous stuff.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Don't bring it with you.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, we need to hose these two off before they come in the door.
Really?
I did bring you some deer meat, Dr. Steve.
After you telling me about prion disease, I don't think so. Thank you.
They're clean. Okay. Clean deer. Clean Georgia deer.
You.
Uh-huh.
Well, thanks for coming. You guys are awesome. Charlie and Lindsay Kilmaster, two real scientists in here, making us both look kind of dumb in comparison to these brilliant geniuses. So thank you for being here. We can't forget Rob Sprantz, Bob Kelly, Greg Hughes, Anthony Cumia, Jim Norton, Travis Teft, that Gould girl, Lewis Johnson, Paul Ofcharsky, Chowdy 1008, Eric Nagel, the Port Charlotte Horror Lindsay, the Saratoga Skank, and the Florida Floozy, all are listeners to this show. Roland Campos, sister of Chris, Sam Roberts, she who owns pigs and snakes. This stupid list has just got longer and longer. And this is what happens with 17 years of doing this. Pat Duffy, Dennis Falcone, Matt Kleinschmidt, Dale Dudley, Holly from the Gulf. And if I don't do it, people are like, well, where's my shout out? Christopher Watkins, Double, a.k.a. Steve Tucci, the great Rob Bartlett, Vic's Nether Fluids, Cardiff Electric, Casey's Wet T-Shirt, Carl's Deviated Septum, the inimitable Vincent Paulino, Eric Zaitunian, a.k.a. Eric Zane, Bernie and Sid, Martha from Arkansas's Daughter, Ron Bennington, and of course our dear departed friend, Fez Watley, who will never be forgotten. All of these who supported this show has never gone unappreciated. Listen to our SiriusXM show on the Faction Talk channel, SiriusXM channel 103, Saturdays at 7 p.m. Eastern, Sunday at 6 p.m. Eastern, on demand and other times at Jim McClure's pleasure. Many thanks to our listeners whose voicemail and topic ideas make this job very easy. Shut up, Echo or whatever your name is. Go to our website at drsteve.com for schedules and podcasts, other crap. Until next time, check your stupid nuts for lumps, quit smoking, get off your asses, and get some exercise. We'll see you in 1 week for the next edition of Weird Medicine. Thank you all.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Angie. Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs and projects done well. Let me tell you, there's the version of it where you try to do something at home, and then there's a version of it where you have someone help you, you watch them do it the right way, and you go, thank God I didn't try to do that myself. I have fully done things around the home that I think look good, and then a bang in the night, and I wake up to a shelf collapsing, a painting falling off the wall. Like, I've seen it all go south. I own a home, and I can tell you, I know how much work it can take. Whether it's everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that and find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor. You can Angie that and connect with skilled professionals to get the project done well. Right now, one of my wish lists is I want a bike for my condo in Milwaukee, and I would love to rig it up on a pulley in the ceiling because I have one of those like lofted ceilings, but I'm so scared to try that on my own. Angie has 20 years of home experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app. Answer a few questions and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish, or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of any home project in just a few taps. Because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.